Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So good friend Brent Carey, the great creator of Empower Radio, hooked me up with our latest guest, Sherry Higgs. She's the creator of Drivers for Survivors, and she is also a breast cancer survivor. How are you today, Sherry?
I'm good, Mel. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So I got you up early because you're on the West Coast and I'm on the East Coast. I hope you had your cup of coffee and we're all ready to go.
I did.
We were talking a little bit before the show about your organization, Drivers for Survivors, but I always like to hear about how you found out you had cancer and then how you formed Drivers for Survivors. So let's start from there.
Absolutely. Well, basically what happened was one morning in February of 2010, I woke up and my breast was swollen, a little inflamed, red and lumpy. It looked like you would look after you've given birth and you start producing breast milk. So I called over to urgent care at the time. They got a hold of my doctor and they said, go in. Long story short, I got immediately diagnosed within 2 or 3 weeks with inflammatory breast cancer, it's a potentially life-threatening breast cancer, and it's one of the rarest and most aggressive. So it was just completely jaw-dropping that I went from being this healthy woman who also had film before where everything was clear 6 months prior and having not only inflammatory breast cancer, but they also found a tumor behind a cyst rather. So I had to go into something called neoadjuvant chemo, which kicked in very quickly. It worked.
That means you had chemo to shrink the tumor, correct?
Before. You'll have chemotherapy after, and I had it prior. After that, I ended up having a double mastectomy, breast reconstruction. I had radiation. I went through something called, there's a synthetic serum that Genentech created called Herceptin.
Yes.
And basically you're familiar. It strangles cancer cells is the easiest way to explain it. My treatment continued for about a year. So it was just like walking out of your life into some terrifying dream.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Going back to your having your scan was clear and everything, you and I are perfect examples of people go to the doctor and always know your body. Because I would have never known that I had cancer had I not found a lump. You would have never known you had cancer if your breast didn't feel weird. So, the most important thing is being aware of yourself. And
absolutely, and preventative, and even, when these things happen, to be aggressive about it, not to be passive. I'm very confident that if I hadn't have moved as quick as I did, the cancer would have spread very quickly. So that's the thing about inflammatory breast cancer. I got it in the nick of time. And to not, bury your head in the sand and say, okay, I'll deal with this tomorrow. It's really imperative that you just take action right away.
Exactly.
Even when the biopsy happened, I was asked, if you want to go home and think about this. And I said, no, please clear a table now. I'd love to get my biopsy done today. Again, a very smart move. And I'm glad that I did that. It probably is one, these things, as minor as they seem, help save my life.
Exactly. And that's, I know we're talking about drivers for survivors, but I can't stress enough. And if you have to be your own advocate, if your doctor doesn't want to do that for you right away, I always say, find another doctor. Because if you're, there's nothing inside your body where they can say, well, let's wait and see, because no one's looking at no one's scanning you 24 hours a day to see what's going on.
That's right. And I don't mind talking about this as well, because alongside being the founder of Drivers for Survivors, I kind of have more of a three-tiered mission.
Okay.
And that is I'm an advocate for inflammatory breast cancer. So I like that people at least know about it, being that it's the rarest and most aggressive, because a lot of people don't even know what it is. I know that firsthand, because people would look at me with blank looks when I'd mentioned what I got diagnosed with. I didn't know what it was.
Okay, what's the difference between?
It shows us with a rash a lot of times. So I don't act as a doctor. I'll say that.
Right.
I always tell people, look it up on a reputable website or, you know, talk to your doctor. Mm-hmm. Okay, but it basically, it can look like the surface of an orange, the texture of your breast, and that redness is, it spreads very, very quickly. So it hits very hard in the African American community, and also I believe it hits younger too, because when I got diagnosed, I was 43. I'm 48 now. And then my other tier of the work that I do is care and compassion. So all three of those things, those factors, are very important to me in terms of the messaging that I'd like to get out.
Well, yeah, that's very important. Very, very important.
Yeah. You can't come through this and go through what you and I went through and be passionate people and not be able to hit on those topics.
Exactly. And not want to help other people. Like we were talking before the show, some people don't have that in them, which is fine. And that's why we're here.
That's right.
So how did you go from your doing all your survivorship after your year being in the cancer bubble to wanting to do the Drivers for Survivors? How did you see the need for that out there? Because you probably had your spouse, your husband, your boyfriend, whatever, take you to treatment.
So I had some support, but there was a couple of rides that I could not get covered. And it was, I'm one of those people who's prone to anxiety at different times in my life. I have a little bit of a nervous energy, I guess you could call it. And that flared up when I got this diagnosis. And, you know, I found myself kind of worried about the logistics. Then as I'm going through this process that involved a year of doctor appointments, really, your life just changes in that sense. I saw other people sitting in the waiting room by themselves, you know, wringing their hands, looking nervous, kind of looking at magazines but not really looking at them. I saw them at times having to leave and hop on a taxi or a cab. You see people in public transportation that, you know, and the underserved is a really important community to me that I'd like to even tap into more with our organization. But I saw all of these different things, and just the way my brain works, troubleshooting, and then I have a high compassion, empathy level. Mm-hmm. So it just haunted me. It's the only way to explain it. I felt very haunted. And so I started to, you know, write literally, not to be crass, but as soon as that IV came out, I started hitting the scene and attending things and just going to different like things that had to do with transportation related in my community, getting to know different folks. And then there was some media opportunities that happened. I was on the cover of San Francisco Chronicle, and so that became a little bit of a door opener. And things happened along this at this time frame that even to this day gives me goosebumps, because it was almost like I had these opportunities coming at me and all I had to do was catch them like balls in the sky and toss them, and, you know, stuff happened. And I of course had to work at it, but serendipity was definitely on my side. And then I was sitting down with people, talking to them about what I wanted to do to help and creating a transportation safety net. And I didn't even know at the time some of the people I was talking to. I haven't lived here my whole life in this area of Alameda. So unbeknownst to me, I was at times hitting the right people, you know, and then they would kind of push me along to someone else, and we would have a conversation. And then I started to get closer to the group of people who knew about exactly, because at this point I'd identified what I wanted to do, and they gave me homework on, you should look into this, you could look into that, and I would do that homework. I literally just would make everything that they told me was important to do happen. And then I got, word got out kind of more about what I was doing, and we got this office. We had a donor come in, give us $50,000 seed money, which was the best, most amazing gift.
Wow.
Amazing to have somebody give you that first big break. And got an office and hired my first program coordinator. And at this point, things were becoming more official. And then we started getting the interns that learned about, well, that's not true. The interns came from the beginning, because I'd gone to a mixer and someone learned about what I was doing, and they said, I need to do a connection with you and one of the universities.
Oh.
And from that day, I would have interns come in and help me start up my filing system. And I just kept taking these different aspects and growing them. And people would come in and I would give them, you know, hey, how about we do this and that? And then the board, I had a board, and I started attracting more and more board members. Mm-hmm. And
because as a nonprofit, you have to have a board in case
right.
people don't know that out there.
Right. And in the beginning, I'm not going to lie, I would take anybody with a pulse. I mean, honestly,
you're like Happy Gilmore taking the guy outside. Can you sign this, please? Okay.
But now we're at a point we've got, you know, we've got an oncologist on the board.
Excellent.
You know, we've really got a great group of people. My board is my backbone. They work hard. I'm really appreciative, thankful. The community's gotten behind this. There's a lot of cool things around it. You know, media's been kind. You know, we've had a lot of good fortune because there's a mojo with this that is true and authentic and genuine, and we really all have been at this point. I don't like to be an alarmist, but I believe cancer is epidemic.
Yes.
I know that not on the positive, on the flip of that, the treatments have definitely improved and life is being extended, and you and I are great examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a village, and you know, I even approach the way that I've created all this is I'm living out loud. I've been living out loud for a while, within reason, I say. I have my privacy.
I don't see that at all.
But like, for example, you know, so I've got LinkedIn, and then, you know, mm-hmm. most business people do. And then I have the Facebook page for Drivers for Survivors. And that's, you know, more of the neutral voice of everything. We've got different contributors for that. And that's great. And then I've got my personal Facebook page, which, you know, the community is sharing this journey with me. So it's been a really cool thing, because the whole point is to make them a part of it, because they are a part of it. This isn't
yes.
really a business. And sometimes people will say, how's your business going? And it's funny because I never get used to that that word. It maybe it's a business in terms of I've had to apply my previous business skills to it, but it really is everybody's organization. And if everybody puts a little piece of themselves into it in the ways that fit who they are and use their skills in the way that they enjoy and feel comfortable with, instead of trying to squeeze a circle into a square, it makes magic.
It's true. And it's something that a lot of people don't think about as far as being as part of someone's cancer journey. Because you always think that someone will have a ride. Someone will have someone to take them to treatment, which, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, isn't always the case.
Not at all. And a lot of people might be embarrassed to say to their counterparts,
right.
to their friends, I have no one to give me a ride, because we're social beings and we want to believe that, you know, everybody's got everybody's back, but that's not necessarily always the case. So it's a little bit, might be a little awkward or shy for a person to feel they don't have it covered. And then you've got on the other side of things, you may have a bigger network, but you know, a lot of times the trials that you go through and the challenges mm-hmm. of going through treatment can be hard on a relationship, a marriage, a family, because
yes.
everybody's life, it's not just a disease that you're going through, your family's going through it too. So that's why you'll hear so many people go through breakups or whatever, mm-hmm. because in divorces or whatever it may be, because it's such a big deal. Our organization helps also the family unit, because they can fall back on us. And we can help those rides, you know, and looking at our track record, knowing who we are, who the fact that we have a lot of our community members that are, even some of them are really well known. I'm in a Rotary, and I have had two different Rotary presidents
oh.
come in and be drivers for us. So there's all kinds of wonderful people that get background checks that are committed because they themselves have maybe had cancer or
mm-hmm.
their family members. So there's a lot of people that survivors and a lot of people, even people that we've given rides to, that get through and say, now I want to be a driver for you.
And I think the cool thing is you can, when you vet your drivers and also the survivors who need rides, you can say, well, okay, your driver can just take you there. And, you know, if you don't want to chat, can just take you there and maybe sit with you in the room
if
that's part of it. Or
yeah,
you guys
exactly
can have a whole
right.
conversation. Because mm-hmm. sometimes, I mean, you know, when I was going through treatment, sometimes I didn't want to talk to my fiance. It's like,
yeah.
you know. But, you know, sometimes you do need someone to talk to. And, you know, even if it's just the driver in the car, I mean, they don't have to ask you, you know, the same question that everyone, oh, how are you doing today?
That's right.
10 times a day is like, you know, the second time is enough.
Everyone's different.
Yes.
And see, when we bring in the clients, we ask them what their hobbies and interests are, and we do the same thing with the drivers. So when we get multiple responses, we actually look for the best fit. And we're in need of a database, but I don't want to hit on that quite yet. But because of how we do this, it's very hands-on. It's like matchmaking, mm-hmm. but with a different kind of love, you know.
Exactly.
And we do talk about boundaries. It's part of the orientation mm-hmm. about, you know, you're not being their therapist. You're there as a person who's a companion mm-hmm. to get there and to sit through it and to offer that support that they may otherwise not have. And it's sort of a therapeutic presence. A radiation oncologist used that term at one of our volunteer luncheons, and it really struck all of us. And we ended up putting it on the cover of one of our points for our brochure. But it's a therapeutic presence, which is a value that can't be underestimated. That kind of hand-holding is part of healing.
Oh, it is for sure. Whether the survivor realizes that or not.
Yeah. Right. Whether they realize it or not. Well, and I'll tell you, most of them do realize it. We have a stack full of thank you cards to show in the testimonials. We just got a fourth quarter quality surveys, and all of them were 80 or 90 and over. And the comments, because they have an option of making a comment about the organization, and their comments were just so touching. I have it in front of me because I wanted to. So I'll just try to find a couple that it says, I couldn't ask for more from Drivers for Survivors. Both of my volunteers took care of me as if I were their own mother.
That's nice.
Very convenient to have Drivers for Survivors during working hours. I consider everybody involved with Drivers for Survivors the most outstanding citizens in the area.
Oh.
Great concept. Drivers are excellent. I am grateful to Drivers for Survivors because I get a lot of support from volunteer companion drivers. My treatment would be frustrating due to transportation problems if not for this service.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you so much for this wonderful program and all the people behind who are making my life easier by helping me with my rides to and from Stanford Cancer Center, which is over the bridge for us. But we go, basically, with the mission statement, we provide free transportation service and supportive companionship for ambulatory cancer patients in mm-hmm. Fremont, Newark, and Union City. And then what we do is we go 60 miles in the radius, in any direction, the radius of our headquarters here in Fremont. And that really helps cover every single medical facility in the area. And then one of the things that I was completely excited about is that we expanded our service.
Oh.
So now what we do is we can actually provide rides for people who have suspicious findings.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is, they hear from their doctor that they may potentially have something that could be cancer related, we can kick into gear and give them a couple of rides. If they don't have it, then they're on their way. You know, if they do have cancer and they get diagnosed, then they stay with us. They've kind of built up that comfort level, and we can help them up until, you know, as long as they need us.
That's awesome. Now you're only in California, but we want to get you all over the country. That's what we're working
on. Yeah. Well, you know, and this model is working. It's very successful. It's going to take the numbers are there for sure. And I knew that all along. And other people see that as well. We've really substantiated that. What we need now is a couple of things. I would love to see more corporate involvement, to be honest with you. I think that would be amazing. You take an organization, like let's make maybe a transportation organization, because that's directly, there's a link there. And they allowed their employees to give a ride once a month, each person. That right there would be amazing. You know, there's also, again, we need a database. What we're doing is Excel. We work hard over here. We have to crunch numbers, and we're working on a grant. There's a lot that goes on. And, you know, when it comes to this kind of transportation, one of the things that I've learned is that they're not staffed hugely because you have to save costs. So having something that's a little bit more automated would be amazing. We've been really, really lucky. We had a gentleman by the name of Steve Wyatt come in and kind of host our website, and we're transitioning now over to WordPress, I think, for the time being. But he did this just out of the kindness of his heart, amazing guy. And so now what we're wanting to look at doing is having our applications where people can download them from the website. I mean, there's really some automation. Yeah, and I consider myself a modern gal. I'd love to see technology kick in a little bit more for us. I'd like to pull all these pieces together because, you know, fundamentally, my dream has happened. All right, it's up to everybody else now to take it to the next level because I can't clearly do everything. Never have I professed to be that person. All that my role in this from my cancer is to plant the seed. Watch the flower grow, but, you know, we need gardeners.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's where it's at. I like having people around me that are smarter than me, for a matter of fact. You know, got these board members with these different talents, or we have different committee members who have these different gives, and you just kind of give them what you need and let them run with it and, you know, share what you're seeing, because I'm like an octopus. My bandwidth with all of this is absolutely everywhere. So what I do a lot of the times is kind of connect the right person to the person, talk about what's happened, occurred, what worked, what didn't, and then everybody kind of collaborates, create mini meetings everywhere, and the magic just pours out because people really, truly, innately are kind, and they really want to help, and they just need some direction. Okay, how do we make this happen? So everyone kind of gets it now. I feel like I've got this team of people, whether it be the community, the board, staff, that get it, and they're excited. Mm-hmm. They're pumped. The days here in this office, it's a small office. The days here go by so fast. The interns love it. They say they're never bored.
That's awesome.
They love, you know, sometimes it's a 400-square-foot office. And I'll tell you, things have not just, it's tiny. We have one of my program coordinators works remotely. It's working out really well. She's very tech savvy, and she knows how to do things remotely, so it's working beautifully. Again, I wanted to go with modern thinking and mm-hmm. trying to make this work because, again, we're creating the model so that, you know, branching out, we are trying different things and they're working. And that's the excitement. And I did want to go back, though, to what you were saying when you were talking about the drivers, the companion drivers being with our clients. The way that it works is a driver will pick up, they'll call and confirm with the client, pick them up, they'll drive them to the location, and they'll go into the waiting room, and if they say the patient is has to take a bunch of notes, they can invite, as long as the client is comfortable or the driver is comfortable, can
right.
invite them into that discussion. They'll take notes for them. If it's a really long chemotherapy, they may stay just till they're comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the person says, you know, I just want to rest, then they may go, like Stanford Center, it's a mall. Well, they may go to the mall, hang out for a while, and then the nurse will call them and say, okay, in about 15 minutes, they're going to be done, and then they'll come back and pick them up. If, again, this isn't a long circumstance. One of the things that I'm excited about, when we do expand, is to be able to have our drivers work with each other from the different locations.
Oh, nice.
You know, yeah, so that, because Stanford is over the bridge, and if we had an office in that direction, we could have a driver kind of kick in and do, you know, things that we may not be able to necessarily be able to accomplish here. We rarely have to turn anyone down, which is beautiful. Same-day requests for long distance can be tough because, you know, you've got to get somebody who's willing to do that. But we've got we do everything via email. And then we have some people on a call list, and we send out an email on a daily basis to our drivers about the needs, and they'll email us back and let us know the ones that they can do. So there's complete flexibility. They don't have to commit to, I'm going to drive every Tuesday, or I'm going to drive, you know, there is no commitment until you raise your hand and you take the ride, then there's a serious commitment because these are life-saving appointments. If they fall ill or something, they get a hold of us, and then we make other arrangements for the patient. But we always tell the patient to have a backup just in case. And the beauty of it is we're not having them lean on their backups very often.
Right. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that now that you put everything into perspective, you do want to find a grant writer as a part of all of this. You have all of this going on, but as you know, it's more than just the want to have people drive. It's you also have to have a little money to back your nonprofit.
Yeah, and musical chairs with a grant writing is tough because you need to learn the nuances of an organization when you're a grant writer, and it's almost like we kind of need a seasoned grant writer too, because there's definitely the person would need to learn about the organization and really care and have that voice infused into the grants. Then I pull the grants over and I infuse my voice even more when I'm kind of looking over the final draft. I'll go in and add things as well. But having a person that understands nonprofit grants and understands that world, it's important because you have to be realistic, but yet you want to be slightly bold.
Right.
You need to be also a visionary in some ways, yet you need to be able to substantiate what's going on. There's this balance, and you need to be able to convey to these people looking at these grants what it is you see so that they see it and want to invest in you.
Oh, is that all?
Is that all?
Is that all you need out of a grant writer? Well, yeah.
Well, you know, I know that special someone or people they're out there. It's but we provide a service. It's not a product.
Our
service is our product. So
it's true, and for people who like want to donate and stuff, they're like, well, how do you know what's your product? It's like, you know, well, look at your sister or your friend who has cancer and needs a ride. That's your mm-hmm. product right there.
And this is a universal issue. It really is. And it's about care and compassion. That's the heartbeat of even the logo. It's a heart on wheels. And that's another serendipity thing. Our logo, first one I saw, loved it, absolutely loved it. It's been amazing how natural all of this has gone. And the value is obvious. You know, I'll share this with you, a little bit of naiveness on my behalf. But
yes.
In the beginning, I thought as soon as people learned about what we did, people would be knocking down our doors to give us money. I really believed that. I did. I believed that because I thought people would immediately be, you know, philanthropic. You know, they'd look at this and go, you know what? This is fantastic. Because I felt it was fantastic, and I still do. But I now know that, you know, even with media and different things, wonderful things that happen, when it comes to funding, there's more you need to do. And it's tough. It's a lot of work to do nonprofit. It really is. And there's so many nonprofits in Alameda County. There's mm-hmm. so many.
But yours is one of the best, so, because it helps people.
I'm partial, but yes, I completely am in love with Drivers for Survivors. And what's cool is I'm seeing other people fall in love with the organization too. And there is no better gift after having such a, well, let's pull no punches, crappy year.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great to see something beautiful manifest out of that, that take the fear. And, you know, I had, my daughter was 7 at the time. She's 13 now, but I included her in a lot of the opportunities because I really wanted her to see her mom be strong. And I wanted her to not, because if anything, God forbid, happens with her in her lifetime, I want her to be a vibrant, you know, I want her to be a fighter. I don't want her to be a person that succumbs. And those are the things that's my secret bat mission in all of this, is to teach my daughter these skills and be a good role model for people. And there's just not enough. Sometimes you hear all these things on the news, and
mm-hmm.
even as I say it, I'm imagining this thing in China. There's a explosion and all these things in the world that are going on. Every once in a while, people just need to see the other side of life, the
That's
hopeful
true.
Side, the beautiful side, and the caring side. There are people that truly care. They do exist.
And just like that, a half hour's over. Isn't that crazy?
Really? Have I been talking that long? See, I told you I had coffee.
So before the show, you told me how people can get a hold of you. So how do we do so?
Okay. We have a website, mm-hmm. www. drivers4survivors.org, and it's drivers, plural, for, F-O-R, survivors, plural, .org. We have a Facebook page. I have a LinkedIn page under my name, Sherry Higgs. Our phone number is 510-896-8056.
Well, thank you so much, Sherry. It was awesome talking to you, and I want to thank Brent again for hooking us up. If you hang on for a second, I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mal Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on empowerradio.com.